Hey, what's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me. I'm a mechanical engineer. You might have seen me hosting things and stuff over at AfterBuzz TV and the Popcorn Talk Network, or even over as a hitman in the movie Trivia Schmodown. I had to think about how I wanted to say that. Normally, I say I'm mischievous, but sometimes I don't think that quite meets the description. But speaking of someone who is very mischievous, I almost forgot to pull up his credibility because I want to make sure, because he is a very credible fella. He is a musician, associate producer at the Schmodown Entertainment Network. There's that connection. And he is a quote-unquote math boy. It is Alex Marzonia.
It is I. Brandon, you look great today. Your hair looks amazing.
Oh, thank you.
You look very good. Johnny as well. Hello. Hi. We're all just good science friends, good science boys today.
Good science friends, good science boys. And of course, speaking of good friends and boys, you might know him. He is a filmmaker, co-host of the First View podcast, and video editor and writer for Geeks of Color. It is Jonathan Rome. Welcome.
Hi, Brandon. You look incredible. Your hair is amazing. And Alex, I love your spirit.
Thank you, Johnny.
Oh. You look great too. I'm sorry. That
Let's just go on about this. Let's tell each other how much you love each other.
Yeah, great. Can this just be like us holding hands
from far 45 away? 5 minutes of us holding hands, telling each other how much we love one another.
I've been watching a lot of TikTok lately, and there's like scientists who look really good and are sharing their knowledge with everybody on TikTok while looking really good. And Brandon, honestly, you should get on that because your hair is fire right now. Your glasses are fire. Everything, man. It's a love fest today.
Thank you. You know, I do feel like I'm having a weird hair day, but I'm making the best of it. I was, you know, toying with it a lot before the show. Recently took a shower because I wanted to be clean and alert and ready to go for today's episode. And what an episode we have here today. Let's go over some of these topics. A new catalyst turns greenhouse gas into jet fuel. I think that is really cool. We also have ultra precise lasers remove cancer cells without damaging nearby tissue. There's a little bit of positivity there with a very serious topic. Can't wait to dive into that. And I thought this one would be funny. We do have a special segment, of course, for you all today, which I have titled, What a Load of Crap. Why do wombats poop cubes? We're going to be talking about it because scientists may have found the answer. But before we get into all that BS, let's hop all the way back up to the top and let's talk about this new catalyst turning greenhouse gas into fuel. So guys, airplanes pump a lot of carbon dioxide or CO2, if you're looking at the periodic table elements, into Earth's atmosphere. That waste, which is a greenhouse gas, contributes to global warming. But someday, CO2 instead could be sucked from the air and used to power those planes. Air travel currently makes up 12% of all transit-related CO2 emissions, according to this article here. And using CO2 instead of oil to make jet fuel could reduce the air travel industry's carbon footprint, which I think is very exciting. And of course, guys, links to all the articles we talk about are in the description down below. I'm going to throw it over to Johnny first. Johnny, what do you think about using carbon dioxide instead of oil to make jet fuel and its implications in the airline industry and reducing our overall carbon footprint?
Well, Brandon, I'm all about reducing carbon footprints. I mean, that's my jam. As someone who doesn't drive, not out of the fear of driving, totally not out of the fear of just driving, but out of wanting to reduce my carbon footprint. I think that it's awesome to take these very necessary steps in the right direction towards combating global warming, because that's just something that every year becomes more and more evident, you know, with all these crazy climate things going on. The way the article just so tenderly and sexily just talked about how catalysts break apart. The catalyst would then break apart carbon dioxide into separate molecules, and then the carbon would go and hang out with the hydrogen a bit, and that would essentially be what I believe is fueling, is turning into jet fuel. That is awesome. I love chemical compounds and the deconstruction of molecules. But yes, I do think that this is a very necessary step forward, considering how much everyone just airline travels when there's no global panini going on.
Yeah, exactly. And very well put. You know, it is important, I believe, and as Alex also kind of alluded to make science sexy. And that's what we're trying to do here. And I think between the three of us, we're doing a pretty darn good job. But let's throw it over to you, Alex. Now, what were your overall thoughts on this article? Are you excited about the possibilities of this catalyst turning CO2 into jet fuel?
Yeah, I mean, as Johnny was saying, it'll be great to get all those to at least slow down global warming and all the carbon emissions. And a bigger step, of course, would be to, you know, completely take out coal, oil, all that stuff from emitting carbon dioxide. But this is a great first step to at least reduce that. First of all, I don't think people should be traveling right now. Hey, if this will help, then I'm all for it. So let's do it now.
Yeah, let's do it now, guys. Do it now. Well, scientists have actually apparently tried to convert CO2 into jet fuel before, but those efforts relied on catalysts made of costly materials, and the process took many steps. However, this new catalyst is a powder made up of cheap ingredients such as iron, and it converts CO2 into jet fuel in one single step, which I think is a very key takeaway. A lot of scientific advancements, new technology can be hindered because of their cost effectiveness, how complicated the process is, how many resources and manpower you have to throw into making something possible. So I'm sure scientists many years ago were able to successfully, in one way or another, convert CO2 into fuel, but now they've finally figured out a way to do it cost effectively, with as little resources and manpower as possible, which I think is really cool. And so, Johnny, let's throw it over back to you. Was there anything else in particular that stood out to you in this article? Are you excited about these possibilities? And also just like if you have any overall closing thoughts on the importance of, in general, of reducing our carbon footprint and being aware of climate change. I want to hear it all.
Oh, finally, the people in my life don't let me talk about carbon footprints enough. As someone who's very excited to do a lot of traveling when I get past the age of 21, and of course when the pandemic dies down, I'd like to know that. With the amount of people traveling, there's not as heavy that of a carbon footprint as Alex talked about eliminating coal and oil, and we know how hard that's going to be because a lot of that is also driven by money and finances and whatnot. But this is a great step in a necessary direction, and the fact that they're able to make it. To make this catalyst out of such cheap materials to kind of dilute that argument of, oh, well, it's too expensive to make these catalysts because rah, 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 rah. I guess the next step is well, can we actually integrate it? And that's going to be the next thing we watch out for because now we know that it is possible with cheap materials. You said the article says it's a one-step process of turning that CO2 into the necessary jet fuel over oil. The next step is seeing how we can integrate it, if we can integrate it, or if what that might mean for the oil industry, for within airlines, what that might mean financially, if that would be more important to certain airlines. But I guess honestly, it's a time will tell situation. But hey, I'm all about reducing the carbon footprint over time. And yeah, everyone go get a Prius.
Yes, everyone go get a Prius. I think it's safe to say, although it's going to be a slow and agonizing process, the oil fossil fuel industry is slowly on its way out, and it needs to be replaced with new industries, new ways of cleaner, safer, renewable energies. And this, I think, is a very creative way to go about it. What's really going on here, according to the article, is they're taking the CO2 molecules and removing the, separating the carbon and the oxygen, and then taking the carbon and infusing it with hydrogen molecules. And this combination is what creates the fuel, and the leftover oxygen atoms also join up with hydrogen atoms to form water, which is great. I love water. I've got some water right now.
Oh, me too.
Hey.
What are you drinking, Alex?
I got some coffee. It's still...
It's made of water though, right?
It is.
There you go. Coffee infused with the water. Guys, this is a very just... What this really is a strenuous process of taking carbon dioxide and turning it into coffee, which I think is what is really going on here. But no, in all seriousness, there's a last little paragraph here in this article, which I think is particularly interesting and brings up a good point, I think, is that we have a chemist at the University of Oxford in England. His team tested this new catalyst on the CO2 in a small reaction chamber, and the chamber was set to 300 degrees Celsius, and it was also pressurized to about 10 times the air pressure at sea level, which I think is particularly interesting. And over 20 hours, the catalyst converted more than one third of the CO2 into chemical products. And about half of that was jet fuel hydrocarbons. And the rest of it was just other chemicals. But you'd think, oh no, like chemical waste. But what they can actually do with these other chemicals is use them to make plastics. So obviously plastics, not the best for the environment. We know there's a lot of it floating around in the ocean, in landfills. It doesn't really biodegrade particularly well. But if we are going to have, hopefully we cut down on our single-use plastics as a society significantly going forward. But I feel like there's always going to be a use for some plastics in our day-to-day lives, in our technologies and in our infrastructure. There's always going to be some sort of use for plastic. And if it can be a byproduct of a process like this, which overall reduces our carbon footprint, and it's not created through a manufacturing process that increases our carbon footprint, I think this is another kind of like low-key takeaway from this process, this new catalyst, where now we're also using it to create plastics in a more carbon neutral friendly way than we are currently, because in one way, shape, or form, plastic is still going to be something that we use to build with and make materials with even going forward. So Alex, I would like to throw this over to you now. Do you have any other closing thoughts on this article? And are you with me? Do you think that this plastic takeaway is also something to be seriously looked at as a potential way of reducing our carbon footprint, not just in the jet fuel industry, but in the plastic manufacturing process as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, plastics clearly aren't going away. So if we can make them in a more environmentally friendly way, I'm all for that. Recycling helps a little bit. Keep on recycling, and now we can reduce all the carbon emissions from that. But I did want to ask, the resulting hydrocarbon molecules can serve as jet fuel. Does that mean that all the planes have to get a new thing installed to, use that fuel? Or is that, you think it's built into the fuel? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like,
no, that's is a it, question. Yeah.
Is it more, will that be another expense that kind of negates that?
I mean, that's a good question, because you look at like motor vehicles, right? You know, different types of engines require different types of fuel. If you want like a more like high octane fuel, your engine needs to be designed a certain way to run it, to burn it off cleanly and safely, well, cleanly in quotes, but clean as far as the inside of the engine and how it makes sure nothing gets stuck together and mucked up together. And also, you know, or if you have like a car that like runs on like ethanol or something like that, or like, you know, like oil, you know, there's people that have cars and little motorbikes that can run on leftover grease from restaurants, from like fry oil, stuff like that. And so all those different engines have to be retrofitted in different ways. So I think this is a very good point. My initial assumption was that there would be little to none modifications to these engines to run on this carbon based fuel, but I'm not entirely sure. That's a really good question to raise, because if we have to now manufacture a lot of new airline engines, that's good for companies like the Pratt and Whitney's out there who are like, hey, we get to make more engines. But what does that do as far as waste and adding to the cost and all that stuff? So Johnny, did you have any additional thoughts on that? Do you agree with what Alex's concerns are?
No, yeah, I think that's a great question that I honestly wasn't even thinking about. But when we talk about like cost effectiveness and that being a very loud point to a lot of these airline manufacturers, that is a great question to raise, you know. But would it be, you know, but I also I think as much as money speaks, I think that social, you know, just people are starting, because of Twitter and because of being able to voice concerns about these kinds of things and how big an issue global warming is for a lot of people. Perhaps it's an expense that airlines are willing to take. For the sake of publicity, for the sake of, oh, well, Spirit Airlines has, 75% of their airlines are running on this new catalyst. Well, maybe that's more enticing for people to use Spirit Airlines over something like American or Delta, barring the fact that American and Delta have terrible customer service. But
lost a few sponsors. Sorry, Brandon.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Brandon. the periodic table. Brandon Hanna, brought to you by Spirit Airlines. But no, I think that's an excellent question to pose, and I'm curious to see if just societal, just people, you know, the consumers' views are going to be as effective in making that decision as money is.
Yeah, I think those are some really good points, and you know, you brought up the, are they willing to just like take this hit of manufacturing these new engines for the publicity, for people potentially buying new tickets? And also, like, it got me thinking, what is the lifespan of an engine on an aircraft if it's properly maintained, properly taken care of? A single engine on a commercial airline could last a relatively long time, definitely years. So whereas this fuel has to be constantly manufactured, constantly produced. So it's a matter of this one thing that's going to last a long time is a new expense, but it's a solid investment towards the future because we are going to be potentially saving money on fuel. But then how does this new fuel compete with the cost of oil? Oil is probably still significantly cheaper. So there's still a lot of work to be done. But I like to think, have hope and optimism in the industry and humanity that we will make active efforts to pursue cleaner, more carbon friendly, carbon footprint friendly ways of living in general. So with all that being said, I just want to take a look at the live chat right here. We have BCD. We have somebody named Marzonia in the chat. Wonder who that could be. Haskell 420 and Sabrina Ramirez, thank you all for joining us today. Love having you all here every week. Please, if you guys are watching, like this video, leave a comment down below. subscribe to this channel, hit that little notification bell if you don't want to miss another episode of the Periodic Table, because every single week I'm coming at you with some awkward humor, some bad hair days, and some amazing guests. And I hope you are all willing to join me on the ride that is science. I don't know what I'm saying. Let's move on to our next topic, which is ultra-precise lasers remove cancer cells without damaging nearby tissue. So right off the bat, this seems like a pretty serious topic, but something that could be optimistic. So a new laser system that could help surgeons remove cancer more precisely and safely is being developed by scientists. Experts at the Harriet Watt University, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's another thing you can expect from me on a weekly basis, pronunciations, in Edinburgh, are developing a new system that will help surgeons distinguish cancer cells in much better resolution and remove them without damaging healthy surrounding tissue. The new system will be based around ultra-fast picosecond lasers that deliver energy in a series of pulses that are 1/1,000,000,000th of a second long. And this is a technology that can be used for treatment on brain, head, and neck cancers. I know it says here in the article that the concept has already been proven to work for colorectal cancer. And they're now working with people at universities and hospitals to develop this new system specifically for brain cancers. So this is a lot to digest, a lot to unravel. Alex, I want to throw it over to you first. What was your overall impression on this article? Were you at all familiar with this technology, as they say it already existed in some degree to treat colorectal cancer? And do you think going forward, this is something that we can be optimistic about, a cancer treatment that we can really look toward to really be a commonly used, safe practice to benefit the lives of people who unfortunately do suffer from brain cancer and related illnesses?
Yeah, I didn't know about this technology before, but I mean, I'm glad that they're expanding their breadth of different types of cancers that they can hopefully eliminate from someone's body. Everybody has been affected. Everybody knows someone who's been affected with cancer at some point in their lives. Of course, we have Kevin Smets, Smash Cancer. We were hoping the best for him. And this technology is pretty cool. Pico, what is it? Ultra-fast picosecond lasers that develop energy in a series of pulses that are 1/1,000,000,000th of a second long. It's just like thinking that small is just it's mind-blowing. But there's this part here in this article that says this is an ultimate test of precision. Even microscopic loss of healthy tissue and damage to nearby vital structures can have severe functional consequences and a huge impact on quality of life. So it's very, you have to be very precise with this kind of technology, or else you can screw up the future for that person. So it's, you have to be very careful with that kind of stuff. But overall, optimistic. I'm an optimistic boy. So let's get this technology developed so we can help cure cancers.
Yeah, this is an optimistic show in general. And you know, speaking of which, it says here that the laser pulses are so short that there's no time for heat to burn surrounding tissue, and which they say is what happens with current surgical tools. So if this is something that they can perfect, it seems like it could be something that is relatively safe, a laser pulse that can destroy a tumor but not damage surrounding tissue, which is, what we know happens with current cancer treatments. You just kind of attack everything, and patients really suffer because of that, because to remove the tumor, you got to almost attack the entire body, the entire surrounding area. And it's quite the battle and quite the struggle. So for me, looking at this, even if this doesn't increase the amount of cancer survivors if it can somehow ease their suffering while they're going through these treatments and make the treatments less painful, less strenuous on the body. I think that that is a win no matter what. So Johnny, let's throw it over to you. Did anything in particular stand out to you in this article, and what were your overall thoughts?
Yeah, no, this is definitely an interesting development in that world. And as Alex said, you know, we all know someone who has been affected by cancer in some way. It's I mean, look, the concepts of laser surgery have always been very scary to me, especially, you know, after Final Destination 5. But of course, that being a fictional movie, you know, is
or is it?
Well, no, anyways, not Final Destination.
But everything I'm reading about this laser and the development of it and what the success it's had and what success it's striving for is it, again. I'm also optimistic, so I am optimistic that this is going to make huge strides in the community in just safely and securely and precisely removing cancer cells. Of course, cancer is something that has just, you know, affected so many people throughout decades and decades and decades, and it's terrifying. So to be shown these rays of hope, no pun intended with rays, but to be shown these rays of hope through scientific developments, it's a beautiful thing, and I really hope it does work out. Of course, it is in development right now. You know, what could that mean cost wise? What could that have, what's the timeline on that? You know, that kind of thing. But everything they're saying about the precision, the safety, and letting that be the forefront of it as it should be, it's awesome. And I'm very excited to see how this could positively curve cancer surgery in the future.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, it says here, it reiterates just how the importance of not damaging surrounding healthy tissue. They say even a microscopic loss to nearby vital structures can have severe consequences in the impact of quality of life of cancer patients. So if this is something that they can perfect going forward, this could be something that is monumental as far as cancer treatments are concerned. And they also say here that the team will focus on developing a flexible optical fiber-based system that can target and remove cancer cells two orders of magnitude smaller than the current technology, and this is over the next 3 years. So this is an amazing stepping stone that to use these optical fibers two orders of magnitude smaller than what they currently have. So that probably in terms of, because they also reiterate that you have to remove all the cancer cells. If there are some cancer cells that are really difficult to remove on the current system, something two magnitudes smaller, could be life-saving going forward. I feel like Alex,
I feel like thoughts. Would you rather have them focusing on the main thing first, or even going even smaller? That's like my thing with that. And also it says we'll also focus on developing this, but also they were given 1.2 million pounds to develop the system. And it's like, is like 75% going to the smaller, the more micro one we just mentioned, or the main one? Like that's what I'm concerned about, like when you're developing two things at the same time, you know, like where does the focus go?
Great point.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really valid concern. I feel like they can probably simultaneously work on both along the way. I like to think that it won't impede their ability to really perfect their primary goal. It seems to me that maybe, you know, while they're focusing on making this technology viable for brain cancer treatments. Maybe as they're doing that, they realize that they can use the current technology on colorectal cancer, but they can make changes to the way they're doing it, the size of the fibers, and treat colorectal cancer more precisely while they're also working towards brain cancer. Maybe that is what is kind of going on here. It's a little hard to say. The article only tells us so much, but I think that's the point of this show, really, is to have these conversations, to have this open dialogue, to learn about these topics together, but also raise more questions. And that's really, I think, important, as Alex even outlined the last time he was on this show, was like having that public awareness. And if we can help contribute to that in any way, maybe this inspires someone else to maybe, or inspires one of us to raise more questions, do a little more research, and see what is really going on, what this technology is really about. So I think that is also a key takeaway. I wish I had all the answers. I unfortunately don't.
I think, Brendan, last time I was here, I also pitched a Chris Nolan movie. Are there any ways we can pitch a Nolan movie for either of these stories so far? Like Ant-Man going into
in Chris Nolan. Oh my gosh. In the future, carbon dioxide-based jet fuel is as good as gold. So these wealthy entrepreneurs from the future send agents back in time to grab carbon dioxide to convert to jet fuel in the future. Tenet 2.
Oh, or maybe there's no more carbon dioxide at all. They, like, all these jet fuel, you know, like, have converted all the carbon dioxide. So they need, and like, wait, no, that doesn't make sense.
I would love if the catalysts are like Rick and Morty style, where the catalysts are legitimately just tiny people with like laser swords, just like separating molecules. And then from the future, they send back. So it is like Ant-Man, like from the future, they send back people to steal carbon dioxide and shrink down to those same molecular levels. And it's like Star Wars meets Ant-Man, but directed by Christopher Nolan. Oh man, that's it. Written by Kevin Smith, of course.
Of course. Louis Trivia Schmodown's own Kevin Smith. He's a little busy working on Clerks 3, I believe. But there's an idea there.
Never for say never.
And guys, if you thought that this show couldn't get silly enough, let's move on to our special segment of the week. What a load of crap. Why do wombats poop cubes? Well, scientists might finally have an answer. For years, actually, scientists have been wondering why wombat poop is cube shape. Yes, really, as the article puts in parentheses, which I appreciate. Now they say that they've gotten to the bottom of this mystery. Bare-nosed wombats, or common wombats, I didn't realize there were different types of wombats. I'm learning something new today. Can be found in the woodlands of hilly landscapes in South and Southeastern Australia and in Tasmania. The furry marsupials are renowned for producing distinctive cuboid poop, which researchers believe that they can that they then disperse tactically in order to communicate with one another. That's a lot to unpack. Now scientists at the University of Tasmania have discovered more of this curious phenomenon. Wombat poop, guys. Johnny, I know you're super excited to also get to the bottom of this mystery. Let's throw it over to you first. What was your overall impressions from this article? And as I just learned a few new things about wombats, was there anything that you took away for the first time in this article where you're like, wow, I didn't know that?
I'm glad you asked, Brandon. I'm very, I think this article enlightened me in ways that that only How to Train Your Dragon ever has. And I think For one, I knew wombats existed. I had no idea what they were. And I never knew about wombat poops being cubed. So this is all just new information to me. But it's all fascinating information. I do love when scientists spend time unraveling information about things that come out of marsupial butts. Much like a while ago when it went viral on TikTok, that vanilla flavoring and vanilla scents come from a goo that is it comes off of a beaver's ass, a butt. And it's like a goo that comes off of beaver butts, and that's how they make vanilla flavoring and scents. I love poop science. And what intrigued me the most about this article, because they link to the initial research that scientists did on a small blog called Soft Matter. And they showed the actual like mathematical diagram that the scientists used to determine not why, but how wombats poop cubes. And it's so fascinating that scientists, through mathematical probability, through understanding pressure, volume, and time, learn that wombats mold these poops in their really, I think it's what, 33 feet long intestines, and just let them out. And that they're using them to communicate. But what are they saying to each other? It raises questions. It answers questions. And all around, I'm excited, especially knowing we have Alex, the self-proclaimed math boy here. I'm excited about all the mathematical stuff that has to do with this for no reason. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm just learning everything today.
Awesome. I'm absolutely loving your excitement about this topic. Yeah, like you said, wombat's intestines are 33 feet long, which is about 10 times the length of their bodies. And it says here, using laboratory testing and mathematical models, like you just pointed out, a team of researchers found that there are two stiff and two flexible areas around the circumference of the wombat intestines. The research found that these cubes are formed within the last 17% of the colon intestines. So like you said, they've used mathematics to pinpoint exactly where the poops become cubed. They also say that the distinctive cube shape of the wombat poop is caused as a result of the drying of the feces in the colon and muscular contractions, a combination of the two. So there's some contractions going on, duration within the colon, apparently even the humidity of the inside of the colon. So there's like, and now they're communicating with them as well. Like you said, it raises a lot of questions. Alex, let's go over to you next. Did this article raise any particular questions for you? And just how excited are you about the implications of wombat poop?
Well, I'm just glad that I'm not the only mammal that communicates with poop. But no, it's really cool to see, like, to think that they are super unique in the animal kingdom. Like, no other animal does this. And that's just very cool. It's just a very odd thing that it's okay. Wombats, you get the cube poop. It's like, all right, thanks. But joining me on my screen is the band The Wombats.
Oh,
holding a wombat. I've been a big fan of their music. So I wonder if the band poops cubes. I doubt they do, because they are also humans like us. But if so, then man, they make some good music.
But what if the music that they make is the metaphorical cubed poop, and that is how they've been communicating?
That's why they're unique. I see.
I mean, wow, incredible.
Yeah, this
man,
is this
you get into layers on this show. Yeah, this is deep.
we go deep. Yeah, so like you said, Johnny, they are using these cubed poops of theirs, placing it at points on the what was that they specifically
like rocks and like on their home bases.
Yeah. On rocks, home range, home
tactical base. Areas. I just love the use of the word tactical.
It's tactical is what this article.
It's okay. Can we all like pitch? Like, what do we think? What do we think they're saying to each other? What do you think this is? Like, I just want to know.
Is it like? I wonder if it's like a romantic thing. Like, hey, my poop's the biggest. Like, you know how like peacocks or you know some of the birds, they're like they show their colors and stuff for mating. I wonder if this is a mating thing. You know, just the fecal mating.
That's interesting.
A weird phrase to say.
It could be a mating thing. You know, well, I mean, have you ever had like some like bro friends in like high school who like, you know, were like, yo, did you like see the size of the poop that I just took the other day?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely I was on a trip with some of my friends a while ago to a place. And when we were at a rest stop, there was two stalls. And we played a game called Battleships, but the P in the was replaced with a T. And we it was a contest to see who could poop the loudest. And it could totally just be like a cocky thing, like wombats are like, I'm a better wombat than you. Watch me pour my poop. It's like whoever has the biggest poop square, poop cube, wins.
Poop cube, a pube.
So it's like a dominance thing, perhaps.
It could be dominance. It could be mating. It could be a form of art. It could just be. Ooh. It could be like their Legos. Like their Picasso. You know, I, as a big Lego connoisseur, as you can see, I believe it could just be that they're tactically placing these poops, but that they're going to then combine the poops to form a giant wombat structure to you know, like a Trojan horse type of situation.
Or like a Voltron kind of thing where it's a wombat poop.
Like monster. Wombat Power Rangers or something, you know, like.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to unravel there, a lot to unpack. Guys, let us know in the comment section down below, what do you think these wombats are saying with their poop? What are these tactic? Are they like planning?
It's tactical. That means they're thinking about it. That means the scientists watched a wombat poop and then pick it up and moved it to a specific place.
And looked the scientist in the eyes as they were doing it. They're like,
yeah, and nodding.
You know what I'm about.
Yeah.
And then Christopher Nolan says, wow, I really saw these wombats move in their poop in a tactical formation. So that's how I came up with Tenet.
Yeah. It's actually the wombats from the future.
Putting the idea. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Oh my God. I would love if you get an aerial view of like Southeastern Australia or Tasmania, all the poops just form some sort of like crop symbol. Like it's like legitimately a message that's like, oh man, that'd be amazing.
lots to think about there, guys. But I think I was really trying to think of a poop pun, but I just draw it a blank. So let's just say, you know, it was really wonderful having the both of you here with me today. It's, you know, poop is the end of the life cycle of food. So this is the end of your short time on this show today.
All right. It's a long road. What you got there?
Yeah. You did it. You did it with good hair, great glasses. Oh, we're all wearing glasses. Look at that.
Hey, glasses boys.
The positive glasses boys.
Oh, I just realized that. Well, thank you guys so much for being here today. Thank you so much for complimenting my hair. brief interruption on the show here, guys. That's okay. Thank you so much for complimenting my hair, even though it is absolutely out of control. Oh, no, my God. Alexa is literally talking to me right now, guys. This has gone off the rails. Alex, where can the good people find you online?
You can find me right here at Alex Marzona on Twitter. I just put out a lyric video for one of my songs, so the link is in there. So check that out.
Oh, there you go. And Alexa is still talking. Shh, robot lady, please stop talking.
It's the wombats trying to communicate to you.
Oh my God.
Like, stop talking about what we're doing. Stop talking about our secrets.
That's it. Johnny, thank you so much for joining us here for the first time. It was so great having you. I know you have some stuff to plug, so please plug away. Where can the people find you online, and what are you up to?
At It's Johnny Rome on Twitter. Also TikTok. I've been having a lot of fun making TikToks and stuff. The first few podcast is coming back. We're a podcast. We promote diversity in life. We talk to BIPOC guests. Promote their creative ventures, business ventures, talk about being BIPOC. It's all very important, Geeks of Color. And all that.
Awesome. And I am Brandon Hanna, of course. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. And of course, if you're watching us here, you've already found my YouTube channel, guys. So please, once again, hit that like button, subscribe, hit that notification bell and all that stuff, because we're going to be bringing science to you every single week. So with that being said, guys, I'm going to close this show out the same way I close it out every single week. And that is by saying thank you for taking time.